Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. The date is December 27th, 2010. It's 7 p.m. in the evening. Hoping that your Christmas was a joyous, peaceful, and very loving Christmas with your family. I hope I can say that on the air without somebody chasing me down and saying I was politically incorrect. My name is Tom Pastore. I'm here with my co-host, Sally Baptist, and Larry Marinsky. The show you're listening to is the spreading worldwide show known as the American Statesman here on Blog Talk Radio. Our call-in number is 347-857-4364. Tonight we're going to be discussing a few matters at hand here with the upcoming year. First, I'd like to report the census report of 2010 allowed Santa Claus to take and give some gifts this year to Florida and Georgia, where our co-host Larry lives. Georgia got one extra seat in the House. Florida got two. And there's a list of other states, such as New York, that actually Santa Claus went and took some away.
Took
we
two.
We can get into that list. Well, yeah, I didn't want to get into the exact numbers because there's a list of states that actually has a variety of numbers there. Santa Claus went through taking and giving this year. Unusual year for Santa Claus. And as we reach the 2011 year, we're going to discuss Ron Paul tonight, and we're going to see if his demand, which is going to get more intense as we get closer to the new legislative season for the Federal Reserve to open those books. Books never been opened, never been seen. The autonomous agency known as the Federal Reserve is now going to have to possibly and hopefully open the books and let people know what they're doing with our money. Well, I'd like to say good evening tonight to Sally Baptist and Larry Marinsky. Hoping your holiday season was a very nice one, peaceful one, and also with the upcoming new year. And good evening to both of you.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Yes, I definitely had a very nice Christmas. It was very merry and enjoyed my time with my family and all that good stuff. And I'm glad that you did say it. We're allowed to say Christmas on American Statesman. And tonight is going to be a very interesting discussion. I think the Ron Paul era is about to hit us, and it's going to be pretty interesting. And I'll pass it over to Larry on that note.
Well, I just want to say the same as Echo co-host, Merry Christmas. And, of course, we're still upon Christmas. The Magi still making their way to the manger, present their gifts. And so enjoy this holiday. It's actually one of the longest holiday that we celebrate in the United States for a period of time. So again, enjoy it until we get up to the new year. And also, I'd echo what Sally said: is tonight's program is going to be a very good one. It's going to be filled with a lot of footnotes and give you some perspective, hopefully positive, into the new year in preparation.
Well, it looks like Tom may be having some problems with Skype again. So we can go ahead and kind of get started a little bit on the Ron Paul thing. For those who may not be aware, Ron Paul is now a congressman from Texas, Republican. He's a Republican / Libertarian. He's been a very active voice in addressing the monetary crisis we're having and the stuff that Ron Paul has been warning us. He's been warning us for years about what was going to happen. And so he's actually a doctor. He's a medical doctor. I can't remember what his specialty is, but he is actually a physician. And So how he managed to get so well versed in the monetary side was kind of interesting to me too, but he definitely understands what the Federal Reserve is, and you know, I'm going to attempt to, probably Larry would be able to explain some of this better, but the Federal Reserve, what it actually is as an entity and how it's been given so much control and power, and this is what Ron Paul has been warning us about. And Ron Paul has his book about End the Fed, and I think it was just this year it came out, End the Fed, and how we need to abolish what this Federal Reserve thing is. And I remember, I would say probably 5 years ago, I had gone in, and you can find it online, Freedom to Fascism is what the DVD is called. Aaron Russo was the one who actually created this thing, where he went to the IRS and the whole thing, and it all goes into about the Federal Reserve and also the 16th Amendment about taxes and stuff like that, income tax. And Ron Paul was in this DVD, this video at that time. And, you know, our founding fathers warned us about this stuff. Jefferson, I think, was probably one of the strongest voices, warning us not to allow to have some central bank like this. And then those who actually help make or create this Federal Reserve and what it does, how they have so much control to make money, manipulate the economy, all these various things that they do. And they, in fact, led up to this crisis we have. They should not be allowed to do this. They should be forced to edit. They're accountable to nobody, really. That's the other thing. They are truly a separate entity in themselves. And they've never had to truly account. I mean, they go from time to time, go and testify in front of Congress, but that's about it. And trying to audit the Federal Reserve, you know, it's like you don't. They are above that. But, of course, that's what Ron Paul is forcing or trying to force happen right now. So I think it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of curious as to what people are thinking of what's going to happen with Ron Paul now that he is going to be the chair of the House Financial Services Committee, and he is going to be going after the Federal Reserve big time. And I don't know, I think it's going to mean a lot of things. On that note, Larry, what are your thoughts on what's going on with the Federal Reserve and Ron Paul and all that fun stuff? Hello?
You have me now?
Yep, I can hear you now.
A little broad overview, one of the most misunderstood authorities that we hear about is the Federal Reserve, because it's not a U.S. federal system. In other words, it's not a branch of the government per se. So the Federal Reserve has a supervisory regulatory authority, and it's basically a wide-ranging over all the financial institutions and activities. And it works, with our government, with the Fed, and the state supervisory authorities. But it's supposed to ensure the safety and soundness of the financial institutions. Now, that's the underlying mission statement. It's supposed to ensure safety and soundness and also the stability of the financial market. So when you look to the federal government and you rely on the U.S. to have safety and soundness, they actually don't have the authority to set regionally or with foreign governments. Now, that's the other part. As the U.S. central bank, that's what the Federal Reserve is. It's a U.S. central bank, and then it deals with other countries' financial supervisors, setting, as it were, and coordinating actions for managing international financial crisis. So International Monetary Fund, the World Bank would consult with the feds, as it were, in distributing money regionally throughout the world. They all come together. But in the United States, they set the interest rates that they're going to lend to banks regionally in the 12 regions of the country. So it's not all the same. And very recently, there was announced that they intend to float $600 to $650, I believe it was, billion dollars to be able to float overseas to other central banks. So that's basically U.S. money without congressional oversight. Now, I can't see, Sally and Tom and listeners, that what is irrational have U.S. government oversight over money. So the federal government and the Treasury would print this, prints the money, and then the Federal Reserve can set policy separate from congressional oversight and cause the Treasury to overprint money. And I think we'll go into a little bit more detail, and hopefully this will make a little bit more sense as we share information here tonight about the Federal Reserve. But if anything is clear, I think it's clear that the Federal Reserve is not a U.S. government department. Back over to you, Sally.
Yeah, and I think that's the critical part people have to understand. The Federal Reserve, I mean, it sounds like it's the federal government because it says federal. Or it just kind of weird the way the whole thing came about being, and that it truly is its own entity. It's really out there, and the truth is they keep wanting to put more power onto the Federal Reserve, which is where it least needs to be. And, again, I think that's what's so critical about what Ron Paul is going to do. He is going to rein it back in. And, I mean, literally, for them to be able to go out there and just print money when they want to print it, and how they can manipulate the value of the dollar. It's I don't know. To me, it's just outrageous of how it's out there. And then, but I mean, some people absolutely believe you have to have some central bank that controls the flow of money. And obviously, that's not what Ron Paul thinks, because he wants to get rid of the Fed. And I try to imagine what happens when you get rid of it. When, you know, and a big part of that, I have this big gray area as to what that really overall truly means, how that's going to truly impact. And we already know we've got all these various issues of what we've seen on, you know, because the Federal Reserve is the banks borrow money from the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve goes and sets the interest rate that they loan money to the banks. And then the banks, of course, loan it to the consumers or the businesses and that type of thing. And then if they want to reduce or control the money, tighten up the money that's floating around out there, they will raise the interest rate of what they charge to the banks. Well, then, of course, the banks are going to charge more to the consumers, then there's going to be less loans and that type of thing. It's all this manipulation of how they do this. And then when you think about the U.S. dollar is the international monetary reserve, the currency. And so if we get rid of the Federal Reserve, how does that impact that standing? We already know we're at risk of losing it anyway. So if we were to abolish the Federal Reserve, would that help us? And if we abolish the Federal Reserve, how do banks then get money to loan? How do they have to be capitalized? How much money do they have to actually have? How does that whole process change when you don't have a central bank? And I'm openly admitting I don't fully understand that piece of it, but I openly admit, too, that after what we've seen happen in the last few years, we know that we have a serious problem with the financial institutions, the way the banking industry works today, and what part of this is the Federal Reserve's responsibility, that kind of thing. So, you know, anybody, some listeners, please feel free to call in 347-857-4364. Looks like we had Bobby Bean. Looks like he may have tried to call in, but he dropped off. So, Bobby, if you're out there, please feel free to call back in. And it does look like Tom is back. So, looks like you were having some Skype problems there, Tom.
Yeah, I was. I had to do a quick email to Santa Claus and find out what in the world was his present all about. It keeps blanking me out. I keep getting Skyped. And so I'm waiting for a response from Santa. I mean, he's got to do something there to help me out. You know, I think I got some sort of blockade going on here. Maybe I said Merry Christmas one time too many. I don't know. Did I go over the limit for 2010? I don't know.
Welcome back.
And thank you much. Am I still in the same year? One never knows. I might have stepped through one of these stargates. I don't know. But, you know, I'm listening to his talk here, Sal, and I got to confess, I know very little bit about this also. And I probably have more questions than I could possibly have any answers about what would happen. And by the way, as you were talking, I was thinking about America's barometer of greed, the Wall Street, and what would this do to them? You know, they're much about speculation and imagery and losing or closing the doors at the Federal Reserve, coming up with another way for the United States to run its operation. What would this do to Wall Street? You know, one would have to speculate. You know, there's so much talk now with 2011 on the brink over here. What is America's future? Are we standing at the cliff ready to collapse fiscally? You know, there's so much discussion. And I appreciate what Ron Paul's doing, but timing sometimes is everything. We got a national debt that's larger than the budgets of most countries throughout the world. Is his timing right? Let me ask that question. Is his timing right to jump into this fray right away and demand to open the books? What could opening the books probably could it hurt us more than help us? You know, I got a million questions like this. Perhaps Larry could assist in this.
Well, with Federal Reserve, Tom, and open the books, and this is sometimes it's all nonsensical. The Federal Reserve, they're examiners. The Federal Reserve examiners review the quality of financial institutions and disclosure practices. Okay, and that's in theory what they do. There's a lot to this. They allow market participants basically to access the strength of the institutions in all 12 regions in the United States. And, you know, supposedly they are supposed to do, quote-unquote, market discipline. Now, this all sounds kind of good. Thing is, with Congress, they, I think it was, if my memory serves me correctly, in the 90s, somewhere after Desert Shield or Storm, probably 91, 92, Congress passed the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Improvement Act. And it was emphasizing the importance of financial institution accounting, auditing and control and blah, blah, blah. Well, Congress passes these things, but it is amazing, and this is the anathema. It passes these, but it has no control over the policies of dealing with the private institutions, which, to me, we have education law that deals with doctors' practices for licensing. So we have a federal and a state oversight over that. And oh, by the way, Sally, just before I lose this thought, Ron Paul is a general physician, general practitioner.
Okay.
All right, just want to get that out since I'm talking about education law as an example.
Dr. Ron Paul.
Right. So the
he's not like Dr. Phil, is he?
Well, yeah, but he's kind of like Senator Colburn, who they call Dr. No, which we'll talk about. In a few minutes.
I was strictly kidding. I really was.
No, I know you were. So he in the Federal Reserve System, the Congress goes ahead and holds hearings, and a lot of times these hearings, pardon the expression, they don't get heard or get into the news that they're being discussed at Capitol Hill, and a lot of them are really exercise and futility because we're not getting the detail. Now, just as a point, Federal Reserve, they are not regulated to deal with overseas money. And see, this is the little catch-all. We have a capitalized society, and, of course, we all agree that's a good thing. Well, if it's private money, the little catch-all this is that, well, the public owns the money, therefore we're private, we're overseers, and we can deal with foreign nations and countries. Now, in one sense, if you just take a snapshot, we have slid down this continually slipperier slope because we've thrown out the concept of globalization. And what does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean domestic, doesn't mean national sovereignty. Globalization is we're all in this together. Well, when you're all in this together, that means everything that you are working for, being taxed on, is going into this general pool. So the whole idea, there is no trust fund, as it were, for the United States to spend all on its own. We can outsource our private money overseas, but the federal government does the printing presses. They're printing it out, rolling out this money. And as we throw out empty money, ladies and gentlemen, realize one thing, that it's not that the United States money is a safe haven that the Federal Reserve works on. It's not that people run to buy dollars because they think it's a great investment. Reason why, with the Federal Reserve, the United States, the reason why it is still it's deteriorating. But the reason why people buy dollars is because they owe internationally, and of course domestically we distribute it, dollars. And believe it or not, in some places of the United States and in parts of New York City, which is one of the most prolific, New York City will have, if you've been there, occasionally you'll come across in that large city, signs on windows saying we accept euros, which is the most prevalent, and because the euro, of course, is worth more than the dollar. So keep in mind that the Federal Reserve is not regulated by Congressman Ron Paul, by Bonnier, by any other of the senators or congressmen. It is not regulated by them. So whether or not this oversight or this audit, Sally and Tom, will be successful, only time will tell. But my guess is when this gets ready to lift off the tarmac, my guess is, as we'll talk about tonight, we're going to throw out some dates and we're going to back it up with some very powerful names. My guess is that we are going to see deterioration in the dollar that's going to make the discussion in Congress basically meaningless. Not all is lost, but you know, we'll explain that when we get a little deeper into this conversation.
Okay, and here's something. This was from an article. Let me see what the name of this article. Ron Paul appears poised to irk the Fed chief. And this is quoting out of this article. I'm just reading. If the Fed were abolished, he wrote last year, the national wealth would no longer be hostage to the whims of a handful of appointed bureaucrats whose interests are equally divided between serving the banking cartel, I think that's an interesting way of describing it, the banking cartel, and serving the most powerful politicians in Washington. It's not hard to imagine Mr. Ron Paul lecturing the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in a committee room. You can absolutely veto everything the president does. You have the power to veto what Congress does. The fact is that you have done it. You are going too far. So this is the tone from this is an article I was reading from, quoting, and this is Ron Paul, where he knows the central bank has way too much power. And that's, again, serving the banking cartel. I think that's kind of an interesting way to describe it. So we need to, and getting back to one other thing you mentioned, Larry, will he be successful in auditing the Fed? I personally think he will, because they did it. He actually had a bill passed on this, and it actually passed the Senate and the House. And then, of course, he was getting pushback, but from the committee. I mean, I believe it was Congressman Dodd who was there at that time. He was the current chair, and of course, we all know what he did as chair of that.
Committee. I wish I had his sweetheart deal on the mortgage. Yeah.
Yeah, how convenient. And this is the kind of stuff that goes on, and this is why Ron Paul is so...
lucky guy.
What's that?
Just a lucky man, that's all right there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I didn't know how to smile.
Of course. No. But anyway, so Ron Paul, I do think he will be successful at auditing the Fed. If they don't audit the Fed, it's going to look extremely bad. It's not going to be good on, politically if they're not able to say, well, wait a minute, you control our money, but we don't have the right to know what it is, what you're doing with it. You know, so I think if we don't totally abolish the Federal Reserve, I think there's going to be some major controls put in place.
Well, Sally, this is probably I'm sorry. Someone else have a? I got a little couple of second delay there. Someone else had an input.
No, I just wanted to say that Bobby Bean is also on the line and hoping that he also had a very merry, joyous Christmas. Bobby, to announce that you're on the line, and jump.
No, I had a nice Christmas. You know, I had a good Christmas. I got plenty of ammo and a new gun. Somebody bought me. So you know.
Well,
you know, but we definitely used. We were allowed to say Merry Christmas and have Saint Nick run around. You know. That was permissible here in Florida.
Well, we appreciate that. And jump in here as the conversation progresses. But let's go back to Larry's point. Larry, what were you saying?
Yeah, I was going to say, like what Sally is saying, and everything we say in American Statesman here, we're all very, you know, positive. So is our listeners, and the idea that we can control, hopefully our personal and family destinies. But let me just make a comment as being realistic about the prospects of auditing the Fed or abolishing it or what have you. Let me just throw something in here for food for thought. Very recently, there was the day after Christmas, actually, December 26th, there was an article out, and this, I want to use this as a segue. Senator Tom Colburn, Republican of Oklahoma, who has the moniker, he's called, you know, Dr. No. And, you know, again, out there, folks, sometimes people, you know, have positive monikers, or people make, you know, make fun of American-style statesmen because they are the one or two or their handful that stand out and really say things that are truthful. And that's fine. You know, history will record them as they were. But he's called Dr. No. And the reason why he's called Dr. No is because he says no to what we used to call riders on bills and what they call earmarks, which are closer to defining spending money. And so he says Dr. No, and he believes there's a lot of money to find and cut in the budget. And he's very influential behind the scenes, carving the unnecessary things in difficult times. So to him, for that, I say as one American, thank you for reading the bills, and thank you for spending the midnight oil doing it. But here's the ominous part. He believes, and I'm going to use his words here, quote, is apocalyptic pain, close quote, from an out-of-control debt, that he believes there's going to be 18% unemployment coming. Now, when does he foretell this?
Hey, Larry, can I say one thing?
Yeah.
No, just because this will help your 18%. I've seen a report of this year, almost at the end, where the black community was already as high, and the African community was already as high as 16%. I just want to throw that out there. I mean, I did see that report come by on one of the internets.
Right, so. But in the thing is, to my retort would be to that is in a multi-ethnic society in the United States, we're all in this together. And even though there might be
realities,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if they're already showing the 16,
yeah. Right.
And I didn't even know they did that, Larry, okay?
Yeah.
When they said unemployment, I thought it was all of us in one group. Then I found out they break it down into each group.
Well, the Department of Labor in Washington, D.C., Department of Labor, not far from Congress, it's a stone's throw from Congress, they keep these statistics. And you know, of course, with less than 2 hours, you know, all of us get off on tangents, but I would touch on a tangent and say we can't profile, you know, for criminals or for those who are going to harm us. But, you know, the contradiction is in our government, just like you brought up, Bobby. Yeah, we do profile down to the minutia behind the green door, as it were, and talk about, you know, different minority groups. And my heart goes out to people who really are participating in the American dream and are honest people. And please remain honest and do the right thing based on the gifts that you were given. Colburn is saying here that he believes in the next 3 to 4 years we are going to see as high as 18% unemployment. And this is a man who was very involved in his track record into the detail. Now, he also said that he could come up with $350 billion off the top for inefficiency and waste. And he noted that, and we've said it here in American Statesman, we have said the three-legged stool. We said Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He said $100 billion in Medicaid and Medicare. And what did he say in Medicare? He said the fraud and the ping-pong, the double-tapping, you know. You go to one doctor, you get the X-ray, and he's licensed by the state of Florida, but you go to the other doctor, no, I'm sorry, I can't accept that. I got to do mine. And then he'll give you another X-ray, give you more shots of gamma, and then he charges the Medicare again. So there's inefficiencies in the system that we could cut. And I think, not speaking for him, I think that's where we're going. Now, as far as Ron Paul, Mr. Colburn, if you took that 3 to 4 year prognostication that he's talking about and just chew on my theorem that when Ron Paul starts to get traction, you know, 9 months from now, 12 months from now. Because it's going to take a while for this thing to gear up, if they even cover it at all in the media. Think about the 3 to 4 years possible unemployment. If the dollar is decoupled from oil, ladies and gentlemen, if the dollar becomes replaced by the Chinese currency, as I've seen someone who's out there in the news, which I'll talk about later, has predicted that another country's money is going to take the lead up there with the euro, then what is going to happen to our economy? It's going to crash. If the dollar is replaced as a reserve currency, I pose it to you, will a conversation in the halls of Congress under a committee with Ron Paul matter at all? Because if the dollar crashes and we get hyperinflation like Germany had, Germany and America have something in common. In their 1930s period, they had hyperinflation. With we saw the old wheelbarrow type going to the bank to get a loaf of bread sort of thing. And then the U.S. had a significant emotional experience with the Depression. If the United States goes through a monetary crash of monumental proportions, will a congressional hearing and an audit of the Fed that may not mean anything anymore? They will say, excuse me, Mr. Ron Paul, but have you noticed we just crashed? There is no U.S. dollar to really talk about. We're moving to something else. We're moving to another international currency, so everything has to be rethought. And I'll have some quotes for you here in the program as we move on. But I just want you to chew on that as you listen to the American Statesman program. Think about it. Throwing a bone. Are we being thrown a bone? But, in fact, that bone is not going to have anything to do with making the soup because we've moved on to another meal.
Larry, one question. Go ahead, Tommy. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Bobby.
We're talking possibly 3 years max, but we could also be talking in 6 months, right?
Yes.
I doubt
it'll be 6 months. Yeah.
Well, we doubt it, but it could happen underneath all the, you know, the world is, you know, the dollar is falling apart.
Well, the dollar is falling apart, and we just had a gentleman come out today, Bobby. Former president of the Shell Oil Company today, and he is predicting. Remember I talked about the pegging of the dollar. Ladies and gentlemen, watch the dollar being pegged to the oil. It's not about the currency anymore. It's about the commodities, whatever it is. Oil is a major trading commodity, and it's bought mostly in U.S. dollars.
Larry, we've got to call a Joe. He has a question for you relating to Ron Paul.
Right.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I'm a champion of Ron Paul. I also founded a coalition for him back in 2007 trying to help him get elected, which unfortunately failed. The thing is, I believe that Ron Paul will probably be ineffective as the chair. It is good that he's the chair, but he's only one person. Other people have to vote on certain bills. He by himself won't be able to get certain laws passed. And most of the people in Congress, as far as I'm concerned, are traitors. So I don't think that he's going to be as effective as we would like. I do think he probably has a realistic expectation of what he can do. He will try to push for an audit of the Fed as a precursor to try to get rid of the Fed. But when you've been around for as many years as the Fed has, that's going to be a Herculean task. I don't think it's going to happen, although I wish it would, because there's no logical reason whatsoever for the Fed to even exist. But I'm hoping that he does do some good, but I don't think he will. So that's what I wanted to say.
Well, I think those are good comments, Joe, and I think you and I share similar thoughts on that. I don't give up hope. Listen, I think Ron Paul, in what he's going to do, is going to represent a broad cross-section of Americans across this country, people who work in government, and also in business. I think there's people that will enjoy hearing someone champion the question, what are you doing? I mean, that's the essence of what Ron Paul is going to bring. Now, fruitfulness.
Cut in, but two other points I really want to make when we talk about Ron Paul. Remember, Campaign for Liberty, Ron Paul truly, in my opinion, was truly the one who was the father of the Tea Party movement. He kicked off a campaign for liberty, and I think he was so critical to the Tea Party movement. And I think the Tea Party movement has to be very aggressive in this discussion. They have to be there, because Ron Paul, he wants to stop the bailouts. He wants to make sure that doesn't happen again. He wants to get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and get address what happened with those two things, too. And I think right now, with the momentum that the Tea Party has, the frustration that people have, it's a combination. The Tea Partiers got to get more Tea Partiers out there. People have got to be engaged and be persistent and support what Ron Paul is doing through their elected representatives, public servants as well. And I think we can help, you know, make a major dent. Is he going to totally reform the whole thing? I tend to agree. That's an awful lot to ask or expect. But I think if people see, people already know there's a serious problem here. And I think when you listen to Ron Paul and read what he has studied up on this stuff, he's been preaching about this for 30 years now. I think he can deliver the message, especially to all of us, especially to his peers in Congress and the House, to say, here's what we need to do. I'm telling you, here's what the problem is. And with everything going on right now, if we want to save this country, I think we've got a different momentum now. I just think if we would have been having the same discussion, several elections back, I think we would have it would have been less likely. I think he has more opportunity today than he did 10 years ago to make a difference there, if that makes any sense. And on that note, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut into you there, Larry.
No, that's fine. Good comment.
Well, Larry, if I can, we have another gentleman caller here, Mr. Riggs, who ran for U.S. Senate here in the state of Florida. He has a perspective on this as it relates to Ron Paul. Mr. Riggs, are you on?
Yes, sir, I am. I just have a link to this on my website, but I took it down. But it's a thing from Mr. Ron Paul. It's from the Examiner.com. It's the U.S. economic history that Ron Paul wants every American to know. And I asked Americans when they read this to pay special attention to part two of this article from Mr. Paul that talks about the private laws of the District of Columbia. And I quote the man as saying, in 1871, 3 years after the legal ratification of the 14th Amendment, the government defaulted on its war debts, forcing America into bankruptcy, which resulted in a considerable death blow for the United States for America. On February 21st, England claimed what was theirs, according to international law, and incorporated the 10-mile square that is Washington, D.C. Now, I just recently discovered in 1864, and I've got this document on my website, that Washington, D.C. was made a state. And we're still taught that it's a territory. But instead of constitutionally ratifying Washington, D.C. as a state, you know how they want to redefine the word marriage to include two same-sex couples? Well, they redefine the word state to include the territory known as the District of Columbia. I have this document on my website under at DirtyUncleSam.com. It's free. Just click on documents at the top of the screen. And in 1862, 2 years before that, they redefined the word person to mean a corporation. So when the 14th Amendment made all persons citizens of the United States, which is Washington, D.C., incorporated, we all fell under the private laws. So hopefully Ron Paul knows this problem. In fact, the Congressional Record from June 13, 1967, page 15641 through 15646, Ron Paul is on this Congressional Record, as well as Judge Perez, pointing out how the 14th Amendment created this entire different jurisdiction than what the Constitution created, which is every Tea Party issue we're complaining about. National debt comes from the 14th Amendment, Section 4. But can't question the validity of it, not the middle of that section. I mean, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And that's a private corporate jurisdiction we were placed under because our standing in law went from being constitutional to corporations. And when 1871 and the Organic Act, all these documents are on my website. They're free. I get them from the Library of Congress. That's where I do my research.
Could you give us that website again?
Yes, sir. DirtyUncleSam.com.
That's easy to remember.
And anyway, when When Washington, D.C. incorporated February 21st, 1871, the last page of that 14-page document where they incorporated, doing business as the United States, they declared themselves to be the owner and the head and successor of all corporations in the United States. Remember, the word person in the 14th Amendment makes all persons citizens of the United States, which is us, a corporation is a person within the meaning of the 14th Amendment. They declared themselves to be own all corporations in the United States and own all property thereof. So technically, everybody's a citizen of the incorporated state known as the District of Columbia, although we're still taught as a territory. But you go to my website, and there's a congressional act right there. You're the first or second one from the top where Congress secretly redefined the meaning of the word state to include the territory known as the District of Columbia.
Wow.
Imagine that.
It's
now they use the remember the 10th Amendment? The states have a sovereign power as a republic form of government. They incorporated that same sovereign power as doing business as the United States and made everybody a citizen, not one state. The other 50 states are part of 185,000 corporate governments in the United States. As of Executive Order 12803, 1992, they all became privatized.
Outrageous.
Well, I'm spellbound here. I definitely have to look into that. Larry, you have any thoughts?
Y'all should have me on the show because I get all these documents enlarged and laminated. And like anyone that ran against me can prove my video wrong, I withdrew from the race of Senate, and I will again for 2012 if anyone can prove the core of it wrong. The world government ceased to exist. It did not survive the Civil War. I'm sorry. You've had a corporate replacement moving in ever since, and that's what you got now. 185,000 corporate governments like Salt Lake City, which is a corporation that has shareholders and everything, the little city there incorporated, City Hall, and you think it's part of the American government. The investors are foreign. They're not even Americans. Like the Federal Reserve, the IRS, is a foreign collection agency. That's even in their own law say that. Matter of fact, 28 United States Code, Subsection 3002, Part 15A. The United States means a federal corporation. You're a citizen of the United States. What do you think you're a citizen of? A federal corporation. Subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And I just wrote an article that got published. Urban Gardens Magazine, We the Sheeple.
Well, I would ask that you please send that to us. What's the website, Tom? Our email address so you can send us some of this information? Because I am building a website. I haven't got it all really up and running yet, but I would like to be able to link into that.
You mean AmericanStatesman@yahoo.com?
Correct, yes. The Florida, yes.
Yeah, I blow people's mind everywhere I go when I prove the entire... Matter of fact, have you ever seen the movie The Money Masters towards the end of it? They even show where the United States, Inc., your federal government, was on the New York Stock Exchange until the 1920s. They show in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
USA.
And the email address is Florida is fl.statesman@yahoo.com. Please forward some of that information to us, because that's definitely very interesting and stuff that I think we should, definitely want to expand on.
I would like to respond to the woman who was talking about the effectiveness of Ron Paul, because he has been preaching about the Federal Reserve and how the... our monetary system has been going downhill for a number of years.
I'm sorry, this is Sally. I was talking about
that. You were talking about that, right?
Yeah. Ron Paul, I mean, this is nothing new to him. He's been talking about this,
talking about the
16th Amendment, how they've manipulated the income tax. Technically, taxing a person's labor is not what the 16th mm-hmm. Amendment was supposed to do. He has definitely studied up on this stuff. And I've listened to him on various shows and stuff like that, and I've read up on some of this stuff. And
he's been a champion of this for many, many years. The thing is that we're all hoping, and I guess his name is Larry, the one who was speaking before, as you're hoping, that we're all hoping that somehow he does make an impact. I think the important thing is he going to make an impact?
And, to me, I think a big part of his opportunity to have an impact truly does ride on the Tea Party movement and the overall outrage that the public has had is what has happened with the financial institutions and the financial policy, monetary policy that we have for this country. If we continue the battle like we started this past year, if we continue going, then I think we have a chance. Will he totally reform it? I don't know, but I think he will definitely shed light on to what it does. I think he will put some things in place where we have the opportunity to correct. And I kind of think on a global level, if you get somebody in there who's knowledgeable about what the Federal Reserve really is, what a central bank is, how that truly manipulates your whole economy.
Yeah.
You know. I'm sorry, what's that?
No, you're all right, Sally. You're talking well.
Okay. Well, anyway.
I'm
kind of curious as to what the world market, when they see something like this happening, that it's not going to be left out of in this uncontrolled environment that it is today, when they see, well, wait a minute, America's actually getting their act together. The United States is actually starting to pay attention to what's going on, and possibly we're restoring some of what we should have in there. Does it not send a different signal out to the world that, you know, wait a minute, we may be in some type of chaos today. Our financial monetary policy and everything else is, to me, in total chaos today. But we've got the people in there who are actually willing to change it. And we've got a people, the people of the United States, the Americans, who are actually out there demanding something different. I mean, that, I guess if it weren't for the Tea Party, I probably wouldn't be as optimistic about that.
You're a little bit too hopeful even with the Tea Party.
Well,
in my opinion, because the Tea Party has been conscripted by the Republicans. That's how they got back into office, by riding on, you know.
You open a can of worms when you say that one, because...
Yeah, that's some of the Tea Party, not all of the Tea Party.
Yeah.
No,
and,
that's correct.
But it's a very valid point. And I think, you know, we have got to shed light on those Tea Party, GOP parties. You call them what they are. If it's not a true Tea Party, then people need to be flagging them as the GOP party. But I do think the, just in myself, I used to be a Republican. I left it because of what I saw it was doing and refused to be part of it again. I think, you know, if you're just because you're a Republican doesn't mean you're conservative. And that's why I had to leave the Republican Party, because it had nothing to do with being conservative. It had everything to do with playing a bunch of games. So I think
the
majority of people... I'm sorry, what's that?
Is the other gentleman still on the phone? We talked before, Dirty Uncle Sam?
I believe so. Somebody just dropped off.
Yeah, this is Tom again. Yeah, Nathan has some comments.
Okay, I'll be
like
quiet for a minute.
I'm sorry. Did I catch you in the middle of the conversation?
Oh, no, that's okay. The main gist was I was saying that the Tea Party movement, we've got to keep it as a Tea Party movement, but that takes a lot of Americans getting involved, and if we keep that going, I still have faith that we can make a difference.
May not
change the world, but we can make a difference.
Now that you said that, if Americans get involved, that's different.
Well, it seems like we have no choice, because after listening to Mr. Riggs, who I believe was the individual who left the air, and I'm glad we got his website, DirtyUncleSam.com, after the brief presentation he just made, the question is laid out there, how much of the United States is still the United States? So, you know, I'm going to dwell on that
Tom,
for a minute.
I studied his website.
Already?
I've been studying it for quite a while.
Well,
it will wake you up.
Well, I'm definitely going to examine that myself. We may put you to the test in a few minutes here, Bobby. Find out what you know.
So I'm going to let you guys go.
I don't know all the answers because
Happy New Year.
Thank you. We appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Bobby.
You know, everybody who's listening tonight, I don't care where you're at, you got to take time and slow yourself down. But to help this country, you need to study this Dirty Uncle Sam. You have to study. Yeah, but Tom, he's going to open up a door, and he's going to educate you, just like when Larry talks. When Larry talks, you might want to be quiet because you're about to learn something.
Well, I take notes when Larry talks because I got a short memory span. And
okay,
Larry
just keeps impressing me every time he talks. I just love to hear the man talk. And and so do I do with Bruce. But one thing I wanted to ask him, and I didn't have a chance to ask him tonight, and I've heard it argued, but on the 14th Amendment, if you really, really got down and studied it, and this is coming from better men than me, okay, Tom, what I hope one day will educate me, because the day I ever win that Senate seat, I need these people behind me. And this gentleman of Dirty Uncle Sam's coming with me. And the 14th Amendment is more closer to a contract if it is not a contract. after you really truly study it, it's been considered and it's been argued as a contract. And that's what I wanted to ask him on that. And I've talked to the gentleman a little bit, but I want everybody to dial in tonight. If anything you want to intrigue about this government, to find out about the corporations, to find out about the United States of America, because most people think the United States of America, how big is it, Tom? I mean, without you knowing it, how big would you think the United States of America is?
As it relates to what? Territory? Square footage? Population?
Yeah, square footage. Give me square footage.
Oh, goodness, I wouldn't know.
All right, it's 10 miles. Okay? When you go on his website, you'll learn.
Washington, D.C.
That's right. It's a District of Columbia. And it's the damn thing's only 10 miles long, okay? And it breaks it down, and even in the corporations. Here's one for you. How many states are in the United States?
Well, allegedly 50, but I may be wrong.
Okay. I know everybody's going to be bizarred on this answer till you study it. But since the word state was redefined, so each sheriff's department, each police department, each county individual has been redefined as a state, we're more closer to 185,000 states in America. And this is why we're being taxed, because we're taxed on our states. Tom, I know it might be a little bit hard, or Larry, to grab your arms around this right now, but I've been studying it for a while. I'm no expert on it, but it's there.
Well,
they're redefining the words.
I find this, you know, he sort of left me speechless there when he was talking.
It's big, isn't it? It's
very big,
Tom.
We started talking about Ron Paul, and we ended up talking about Dirty Uncle
Sam.com. Ron Paul is one of my heroes, okay? Ron Paul is one of my heroes. It's a man, a gentleman I would love to meet and shake his hand.
And it truly is all relative. Cause, I mean, what this other deal, and I hope the other gentleman does call back in. This was some great information. I just went ahead and took a quick look at his website. And, yeah, you can tell there's a lot of stuff. People definitely should visit it and start, you know. It's just amazing, some of these things, what has happened to our Constitution and stuff. But I have to mention, I think I had initially cut off Nathan, so I apologize. I don't know if Nathan is still out there ready to share something in.
He's,
come on, Nathan.
He's still
wake
out there.
Up there.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Nathan.
I'm sorry, Nathan. I had to just say something, you know?
Okay, yeah. No, that's no problem. I wanted to kind of go on something that Bruce was saying. Not only I throw this in, he's got a little bank up there. I think it's up to like 45,000. He wants to get it up. People are contributing and trying to get it up to 1 million. He wants to give anybody that purse that can prove him wrong. Okay, so that he's not just some guy out there playing on the internet. I'm not a scholar to disagree with him or agree with him. There's so much there that it's hard to digest in one point. But listen, one part that I do want you to – he mentioned this, and I want you to look at this. He mentioned Executive Order 12803. If you type that in and bring that up, this executive order that Daddy Bush 1, wrote, which he should have been carried away and chained for this. He doesn't have the constitutional right to do this. But this order right here, 12803, is by what authority that Rubio and Mark Webster were for and would vote and did vote for selling or leasing our highways to our to other companies in other countries, which means, because they're all dictators, another company from another country is that country. So that's something, too. But it's not just our highways. It's our oil fields. It's our power plants, stuff like Florida Power, Progress Energy, you name it. That they are coming over here. And Bush 1 is, and this is why there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. They get up there, it's like wrestling. They look like they're in a real fight, but then both of their policies is like a hand in glove, you know. So get a chance, read this 12803. and sit back with a big old bowl of popcorn and watch the show.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, Nathan, that's the one where it says they can sell public assets. This is where Bush Senior went out there promoting selling public assets, which was the highways and everything else.
You know, the American money, the American people have had their money taxed. I mean, our forefathers all the way up to us have had our tax, you know, just a road. This is just really gets me. They'll say, we need to build this road. Okay, we're going to take a tax out. Okay, not only do they take that tax out of your paycheck, but they tax it at the pump, and then they for trucks, you got to keep your mileage up and then pay for the miles that you ride in that commercial truck on the road. They say it's to repair the roads that these trucks are tearing up and using. After at the end of the day, when they pull in and buy fuel, they got tax on their fuel. It just never ever ends, and then they want to take this road and sell it to a foreign company so that Ahmed can charge me to get on it and then charge me to fix the potholes on it.
Mr. Nathan, do they also throw in county tax too? Don't they?
This stuff is it's got us swirling around the toilet bowl. You know, we're swirling around the drain.
Yeah.
You know, but this thing here. When you read this, you'll see that it's not just to the highways. It's infrastructure, and they're doing that. We got these fans outside out west in California and Arizona and those western states that are up there blowing around in the wind and making energy. Guess what? Those things, not only are they made in China, but the company that owns them and is putting them up out there is owned by China. This is supposed to be the guy you're going to buy your lights from.
Hey, Tom, are you hitting more of that oxygen?
I have no room to talk. I'm just drinking up this oxygen, which I got to look at the canister. It's probably made in China.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
I want you to send one to Bobby.
When you look,
okay?
When you get a chance to read this after the show, you won't be able to read it real close now. But when you look at this order, you know George Bush Senior should have been drug away in chains, and then we got George Bush II. Just going down on the border trying to meld these three countries together, and both of these countries are socialist countries. What right does he have in the Constitution to decide that we get to become a North American Union? Okay? And all these Republicans are for this. That's why I don't think these Republicans right now are up to the task of what we're facing with the promise that they ran on their pledge. I really don't believe that they're up to it because, one, I'll give you one example. Everybody's celebrating Sarah Palin, and she is a moral conservative, okay? And they love that. But you know what? She's for the North American Treaty. She's for this North American Union. She's for amnesty. None of these talk radio people are asking her about that. So, you know, I don't want to get you off of what you were talking about tonight, but this 12803 executive order that Daddy Bush put in there is a part of this. Do get a chance. There's a lot at that site, and this guy Bruce can overwhelm you with it so much.
Well, I'm going to ask everybody here right now, and I'm sure we all have group emails when we communicate with people on other issues. I'm going to ask everyone after the show tonight, tomorrow, take some time and pass out DirtyUncleSam.com. Pass that out to everybody, all your friends, neighbors, email, communiques. Get it out there. And the more people we get it out to, the more people are going to read this. And, you know, this way we're going to be, at the very least, slightly abreast of what's going on. You know, I've been taken aback by this whole thing. Ron Paul is actually taking a back seat now to what we're talking about right now. It's scary, and what's even more scary is Larry has been kept quiet here all of a sudden.
Larry might be getting up off the floor.
Yeah, I'm still. You know what they say about screen doors? They keep honest people out. I'm outside the screen door, not trying to get in. I'm just trying to see if the door is going to open up on the subject again, just so we can close the subject on this Washington D.C. I just want to make sure that information to our American statesmen and listeners, as we go to the websites and we listen, and we said a lot of great stuff tonight and a lot of just a great super people on tonight. I mean that. It's really nice to hear this. Article 1 of the Constitution, folks, just want to make it clear. Article 1, when you look it up, that provides the Congress, and it basically has the power to exercise exclusive legislation over a federal district. And I just wanted to ensure, the district that I lived in for 3.5 years, I'll tell you, it's got a lot of contradictions and a lot of great things about it because it is our nation's capital. A lot of history there, and it's a great place to traverse. The district, established 1791, and this was a result. Remember, it used to be in Philadelphia, and if you remember your history, refresh, because of over 500 militiamen for the American Revolution, that's what they called them, militia, for the American Revolution, barred the Congress at the time, which was our capital was in Philadelphia, barred them from leaving until they said, hey, we want our money, our back pay from that we were told by General Washington and others, we want it. Well, it was Alexander Hamilton that came out and brokered the deal and basically said, okay, let them out, let them go home to their supper, guys. And then it was shortly after that, not the next year, but this was the catalyst of how we basically brokered Washington, D.C. And the original named territory of Columbia, this is the federal district that included the established cities of Georgetown, which is Maryland, Alexandria in Virginia, and, of course, Washington, the federal city. So I just want to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, that what you have right now in Washington, D.C. is a district. And the only difference between this district and a state's rights is the 23rd Amendment. Okay? 23rd Amendment grants that representation for president and vice presidential elections based on the population of the district. Okay? They cannot vote, however, for congressmen or senators, but they do have representatives that have no voting power. The vote does not count in Congress. But as of 1961, with the ratification of the 23rd Amendment, they can vote for the president and the vice president. So it is, it's not Washington's. The federal city of Washington ceased to exist in 1871, okay? Federal city of Washington ceased to exist in 1871, but it was what's called today is the District of Columbia. So I just want to make that clear that they have a city council that's inside Washington, D.C., and then they have, of course, all the federal government workings. And so there is a separation between the Washington, D.C. police and sanitation and things, and then there's the federal grounds. But if you took it all as one incorporation, it falls under the purview of Congress. And there are committees that allocate monies to the district. And I'll just close out by saying Congress allocates more money to the students per capita in Washington, D.C., than any of the 150 states in America. More money is put there, and it has the highest dropout rate in America. So the argument would be, is if it was a state, would it be administered more effectively, more cost-effective? It's actually very small. So I just want to make sure that we say that it is part of the federal government.
Larry, what was that rate again?
What rate?
The dropouts?
It was the highest dropout rate in the nation.
I'm going to hang up, Sally, Tom, Larry. I'm going to hang up, but to add to what you just said and the idea that we're trying to get back to the Constitution, I want to remind everybody that Article 6 mm-hmm. says that no state law, the second paragraph says no state law or foreign treaty can outrank the U.S. Constitution. And the third paragraph says that these senators and Congress and these representatives have to be bound by oath. Every one of these fools should be carried off in chains. They have violated the oath that they made. I'm going to hang up and pray for America before I go to sleep tonight.
Well, Nathan, we really appreciate you calling in, as we do with Mr. Riggs. It's a very interesting conversation tonight. Listen in, continue listening, Nathan.
I will.
And you're welcome to call anytime on any subject. We always appreciate your input. And let me just say to all the other listeners and people on the chat line and such, we want you to be educated, and we hope that you're adult enough to also read, comprehend, and educate yourself. When we state, go over and read what's on the website, DirtyUncleSam.com, we're not saying what's in there is gospel, because we don't know ourselves. We just want to educate you so you can make a better decision about what direction these United States are going in. So just to clarify, we're not
We want to inform them, Tom.
That's what we do, Tom. We inform.
Yeah. I felt there was a need to footnote that, you know, so they would know, because I find what Mr. Riggs was saying, Bruce, was phenomenal. And it was it definitely made me reach out for the oxygen mask. So,
I studied him for a while because I had a chance to talk to the gentleman.
Yeah, but I just wanted to footnote that American statesman is in. We're not, you know, we want to inform you, and we want to trust that you, as adults listening in, can educate yourself by reading this and coming up with your own decisions. But the discussion tonight with Ron Paul and the Federal Reserve has certainly put us on an interesting path.
Well, let's
goal is to save this country.
Yeah, on a discussion of the Federal Reserve System and our banking and our financial stability, and that's basically what it is. It's the underpinnings of our transactions. That's what finances do for us. Of course, for Americans out there, I just want to remind you that you have other tools that are at your disposal, and this country was before it had a monetary system, we had a bartering system. And if there's one thing that will always be out there, you might have limited resources to do it. But American ingenuity is a marvelous thing in human nature. But bartering is the transaction of private exchange of your talents. And what we call in politics is this, and I'm saying this for a reason, folks, so you have hope in the days ahead. If the country, when the United States of America leverages its strengths and resources, what we used to leverage in our dollar, but we leverage certain things, and if a country has the ability to leverage, say, pardon me for using this, a strong military-industrial complex. Okay, so bad example, but we can make certain products that we give to nations internally, and then we'll leverage that for business and other things. Recently, we just did $60 billion to Saudi Arabia for its military industrial complex itself to buy goods.
That's insane.
Now, having said that, it's called leveraging. And then foreign policy-wise, if someone needs, they don't have a strong military, you can influence, right or wrong, their government, their foreign policy by leveraging certain defense agreements. Now, I said leveraging. Now, bartering is very similar, because with leveraging, it can have monetary implications for the economy and headway for the government. But if you're bartering something, it's basically it's an unseen exchange of services. It's called comparative advantage in economics. If I have something in mangoes that you want, and you want to sell me Velcro, well, we'll come up with a price differential that makes your mangoes and Velcro an equal exchange, hopefully. That's how we get to our deficit, by the way, when we buy more goods and services outside the United States. Now, what I want to lead into is another food for thought, a soundbite here on American Statesman. Just recently, I came across a couple of quotes from Mr. George Soros, an interesting man who calls himself, of course, retired now, supposedly was in retirement at the end of 2006, then came out 2007, and now supposedly he's back into retirement, whatever that means. Here's a comment about the economy and your dollar. He said the system, he was interviewed, of course, in this one particular soundbite in 2008, said the system will have to be modified. And when asked about the certain complexities, he said, well, it's a very complex thing. And he goes on with a quote and says, I know exactly what the dollar is going to do, close quote. And he had no comment on the sterling. Now, we're dealing with the Federal Reserve System and overseas folks. Keep in mind that the euro, you hear very, very little about the sterling. Britain is not a signatory to the euro. Why is it not, ladies and gentlemen? Because the sterling is based and pegged to the oil. And Britain does not want to destabilize its sterling or bring down its quality, even though we can say they're overspent. But the trend right now is away from currency into natural resources or commodities. That's the trend. So they're on the sterling. You don't hear much about it. But you hear about the U.S. dollar being the reserve. Now, George Soros says he knows what's going to happen. So when folks tell you and they say, oh, you know, that's conspiracy theory or whatever, ladies and gentlemen, there are people who are in the know. There are people who are rubbing elbows with power brokers who do know what the plan is overall, just like a Federal Reserve will not share its plans intimately with the U.S. federal government. Well, it's right in front of your noses, respectfully. If they won't do that, and obviously they exist. So there's got to be things that are unknown to the American public causing us to shift our American way of life and bringing down our quality of life, and you never voted on it. Now, it goes on further, he said, that the euro will hold together. So Mr. George Soros is saying that the euro is going to be a stable currency, okay? He goes on to also say that the U.S. dollar is going to falter. And now you compare that against Warren Buffett. These are two titans, arguably positive and negative on the battery terminal here. Warren Buffett, more towards the optimistic, and I'm just saying it that way, I'm not endorsing either one. He says here, there is no way you can bet against America and win. Now, he's very optimistic. He came up in a very pro-capitalistic environment. And he says in the short term, folks, short term, we are going to be hurting. And he defined that in about 5 years. Now, he said in about 5 years, we should be coming out of this. So what am I putting together for you right now? Hopefully our listeners can put this together in short order. I'm putting together what Mr. Colburn has said from the inner sanctum of the Congress, 3 to 4 years. I'm putting together what a former CEO has just said from Shell Oil Company and saying that oil is going to go up. He said if it does, he'd be very surprised if it's not by 2012, $120 a barrel. Well, as the dollar becomes de-pegged from the oil, that prediction can be a low ball. All right. I'm also pointing out that what Mr. Soros has said, which dovetails with the short order of Mr. Buffett, is that we're probably right within that period of time from probably 2 to 3 years. Next year in the 112th Congress, we'll have these debates. And I still hold to the fact that it's going to be 9 to 12 months. We're well into our 9 to 12 right now, which started the clock ticking in November. November to October, I believe we just started to discuss this, but I think it was after November elections. And you're going to see the dollar being decoupled more and more internationally. You're going to see the Chinese currency ascending. But don't fear about that, because the Chinese currency is not based on a strong foundation. People are very wary of the Chinese. And I'll just put a little plug in here. You're dealing with a Chinese nation that took a 2% loan from the World Bank, 2005, 2006, I believe it was, if my memory serves me correctly. And they went ahead and took the World Bank money, which is mostly underwritten by America. And, you know, they didn't take that money for internal. This was the complaint. They took the money and they lent it out at a 1%. So they were making money based on the lending. So they're a very unscrupulous nation based on their government structure. And I've said here before, your government, ladies and gentlemen, is not bad. Just like in China, their government is corrupt. It's centralized. And I'm not lambasting the Chinese people. I'm just trying to paint the picture. Your government is not bad. You have a very sound government. That's why we always point to the Constitution. It's the people in charge. Now, we just had another listener. We've had Nathan. We had Joe. We didn't get a chance to finish Joe's address and comment. And we've heard, of course, Bobby and
Bruce Riggs.
And one other. And Bruce, who ran for Senate seat. And what we're dealing with here in this conundrum is points of view about what do we believe is going to happen. We all agree that we are in a tough spot here, but we all know something's coming. But we're not trying to get the crystal ball and outdo one another and saying, when is it going to happen? When you have, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to give you one more, pardon me for the quotes, because I think quotes are quite revealing about personality and character and about leadership. And that's how you determine about American statesmen. That's what it's all about, right? You try to put your trust somewhere and hope it works out. Throw the dice. Well, we had we have a quote here. And I'm going to mention Mr. Soros again, pardon me. And ladies and gentlemen, this is an exact quote, and I shared this with my co-hosts. It's beyond the pale, but it is what it is. He once described himself as, quote, some kind of, with a small g, God. And let me give you the mentality, whether it's Congress or whether it's something else. He said with a complete sentence, with a straight face, he told a reporter, it is sort of a disease when you consider yourself some kind of God, the creator of everything. But I feel comfortable about it now since I began to live it out. Now, this was a comment in 1993, albeit, you know, a few years ago. But this was posted on December 25th of 2010 on the WorldNet Daily exclusive of this comment from the past. And I just want to give you the indication that he is looking at a world global currency, and he's saying, I know it's going to happen to dollar, but I'm not able to reveal it, because he's not the chairman of the board. You were not asked about your dollar and your currency. You are not responsible directly for the downturn. Now, maybe there's things you could have done in your own, you know, personal financial life, invested better or invested not, that's your business, what you did. But you are not responsible for the high costs of necessarily for medical and so forth. This is the people that elected over you. Now, if you think that these are the sharpest knives in the drawer, you have some great people, ladies and gentlemen, but they will not get on television. So we're land-basting a lot of our elected officials, and deservingly so. But we're in this financial mess because you cannot hear some of the sound bites of a few of the good people, and there are people who don't read the bills. There are people that do not understand the fundamentals of economics. They don't understand about three consecutive quarters of a negative growth means that you're in a downturn economy. They don't understand that. These are all sound bites and statistics lie. And arguably the Congressional Budget Office, arguably, you know, and I, this, you can take me to task on this, has been one of the ones trying to get the truth out there over the years. And, you know, I had the pleasure of being before that body at one time. And remember, they can produce and then they hand it over and then people can selectively use or not use because they're not an agency with power. But they do try to tell the truth, and they did it with the Obamacare and what the cost was going to be to the nation. So, you know, with that, I'll just turn that right back over to you just to say that there is a plan. It's underway, and what we do here at American Statesman is just try to help sort through the timing, and hopefully you can be prepared for this. Because when this does happen and you call in to the radio station or listen in, hopefully we're going to be able to help you and all of us as to what are the next steps. Because when it happens, it's going to be sudden. It's going to be plastered on the media. It's happening right now, but it's not being orchestrated to where it's on the headlines of the paper, you're bankrupt today. You will wake up and you will see that headline. It will be on the news and every channel. It's coming, ladies and gentlemen, but how strong those titles are in your newspaper depends on what you do between now and 2012. And lastly, on this one point is the 2012 election has already begun. They just kicked off today the current administration's campaign strategy, and I think we're going to see Axelrod here in January. He's going to be leaving his position at the White House, and he's going to be going off back to Chicago or some office in D.C. to begin the information operation campaign for the re-election. So I think Mr. Colburn, I think he's got it right, 3 to 4 years, because 2012, ladies and gentlemen, the only advantage of a crash between now and 2012, of a severe one, oil's going to go up, your gasoline's going to go up, this Shell guy's right, he said it's going to be $5 a gallon here and not too long from now. If that's true, I think the Republican Party is probably going to benefit if there is anything next to a severe crash, but I think psychologically they're benefiting right now because of the presidency. And all you can do is hope that we have a Johnson-esque announcement that there will not be a re-election bid, and that will make some folks very very comfortable. But be very careful on who is coming out. If anybody was ever connected with a health care debacle, this development, be very careful about where that health is going. And hopefully tonight, Sally and Tom, we can have a little update. There is an update on the health care that just came out that does have an economic and a health implication. Because those things that are not voted on, ladies and gentlemen, we've said it here on American Statesman to inform you. If you don't pass legislation, it can be done by executive order, which is legislation by fiat, passing a law, an executive, and it takes a while to overturn. In fact, it's very difficult to overturn an act. It's a lot easier, executive order, it's a lot easier to overturn and repeal a law than it is an executive order, historically speaking. And if anything needs to be constitutionally, I think it was Charlie Klein on a past show, we need to sue. He said, well, we need to be able to bring and sue Congress for Constitution. If there was anything that was more constitutionally to be legally challenged, it might be presidential orders. If you think about it, more than saying a particular law because of the implications it has on the public. So with that, I'll turn it back over.
Well, excuse me. What's up?
No, Larry, when the fuel goes up, obviously electric's going to go through the roof, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And also our our food is going to go through the roof. I mean, and also there's possibly a situation where you have food shortage, right?
Yeah, but I don't want to catch anybody out there based on the Food Modernization Act growing your own food now. Don't do that.
Oh, no, no, you have to sit at home and starve.
Hide those carrots.
Did you read that?
A couple of things I was going to comment on. Larry, you were talking about the bartering. And I tell you, nothing would make the IRS matter if people start bartering or doing more of it, because it is happening. And I see more of that going on now, people exchanging services here and there because of not having the cash or whatever else. But I'm sure the IRS will try to figure some way to tax you.
But, you know, Sally, right, I would tell anybody out there is this, since you brought up that about the and I know that was tongue-in-cheek comment, but I would say to everybody out there, look, pay your taxes. You elect a representative to elect you in Congress, and you believe that that individual is going to represent you. Call up if you believe something is unfair, if you believe in fair tax, you believe that the estate tax, anything, please pick up the phone or write a letter, whatever you'd like, send an email, and view your, air your disagreement or your endorsement of any particular legislation. But here in American Statesman, I believe I'm speaking for everyone, we advocate that you do your civic duty, you know, use your moral conscience, and if you believe something is not right, then hire an attorney. But do pay those, pay your taxes, and do things that are legal. When we start talking about bartering or things, bartering has a deep definition. And bartering doesn't necessarily mean circumventing taxes.
I'm just saying that's a side benefit of it.
Right.
It means that to the IRS.
Right. No, but here's okay, maybe bartering is not a good idea, but or a good way to express it. But if bartering, ladies and gentlemen, this is about your community. This is the way it used to be. So take the message in a very positive and informative way, and hopefully you'll think about this. Bartering is not necessarily to take a place of currency, but if you cannot afford, I'm talking about a retiree, I'm talking about a young struggling family, I mean, come on, law-abiding, you know, does everything right, stops at stop signs at 2 o'clock in the morning when no one's watching. I'm talking about doing the right thing, and you're trying to take care of your family and also your personal life. If you've got a neighbor that knows how to put shingles on in a spot that is weak, you get together and you share that. Technically, by the definition of Webster's Dictionary, that's the bartering exchange of goods and services. But it's a neighbor. We have a lot of examples of that. But my point in mentioning that was, if you get into hard times to where, you know, your job, your hours are cut back and so forth, I seriously would like you just to sit back and don't stress on this. Start thinking now. What talents do you have? Your neighbors, you talk like-minded, and if things do get rough as the time goes on, how can I take care of the security of my family and exchange talents? And there's nothing wrong. You know the old thing about, I'm going to go next door and get the bowl of sugar or a cup of sugar? You know, you might have to go next door and borrow a hammer. You might have to start getting to know your neighbors a little bit better in rough times, because people are not going to be able to maybe have the gas. On American Statesman, like Bobby Bean just said, goods and services, you're right, Bobby, are going to go up. But I've got to tell you that there's been a lot of companies, to their credit, have not raised the price of your food in the supermarkets and passed on during that high point when the gas did go up. So the profit margins are a little bit less for some.
But aren't they going to eventually force, Larry, even if they don't want to do it, and they're great people, the shareholders, unfortunately, a lot of people get greedy for the almighty dollar. It can happen, right?
Right.
I mean, well, yeah. I would prefer to go your way on the Good Samaritan. But also keep in mind that Bobby Bean is a very good carpenter, anybody out there, an electrician.
And I don't fight, you know.
And I'm one that work for trade.
My comment in reference to the bartering, I believe it's going to be a necessity that people are going to have to do that to survive because of what's going to happen. Because you're not going to have the money. You know, you're going to barely be able to make the house payment and pay the, you know, your basic living. And then so anything that you can do, the bartering, and I personally, you know, the IRS, that's their problem. And to me, it's not a matter of trying to cheat the IRS. It's a matter of trying to survive in the circumstance that you're in. And
hey,
so,
your family, Sally.
What's
your
that?
Job as a father, your job as a father, the way I look at it as a father, is to feed your family. And the mother wants to feed the family. And the IRS can go pound salt, you know.
Well,
we're not looking for an argument. We're just looking for a full stomach before we go to bed at night. And it would be nice to see a couple of pancakes in the morning. And an oxygen tank for Tom.
But I'm just saying, the economy is going to be such that people will have to do this. And if the IRS, you know, I mean, here they're going to try and chase everybody down if you paid over $600 for something, for the taxes and the 1099s and all this other stuff, which is totally nuts. And I think them doing that by itself is going to force people to do more types of bartering to try to get away from all the paperwork. Can you imagine having to file a 1099 now if you pay somebody over $600 or more to do something? The other part I really wanted to get back to was...
take it out and trade, right? If you take it out and trade, you know, I build a fence and you give me a case of beans.
That's my point. That's exactly my point.
I'm fine with that.
If they want to try to tell the IRS how many beans you sold to them or whatever.
You know, Sally, I think that just hearing us go back and forth on this, very important subjects and very heady. I think when as times get more acute, and if Mr. Colburn is correct, and I think we're heading to the problem with the dollar, and we just need to be positive in taking control of our destiny. I think this radio program, and I can say that to our listeners, will become a life jacket, because when that time does come and people are stressed, because, you know, significant emotional experiences happen throughout life, and it hasn't reached the consciousness net yet of the American public. When it reaches that point, our listeners are going to be able to tune in, because it's going to be a topic. And I am so confident that we are going to be able to help them get through with, like, again, what Bobby brought up about prices going up in different areas. We'll have transportation costs. I think, to our credit, American Statesman listeners, we're going to be able to discuss with you and provide some suggestions as to how you're going to be able to get through this with nutrition for your children, for the elderly, yes, bare essentials.
Flush your toilet bowl. To have a light on in the house.
Right.
Hopefully a radio station to charge your computer. Those are just little things right now. What a solar panel can do.
Well, I'm not so sure it's going to get to a crisis point to where we're all going to be competing to sell apples out there, because I do want to have a little glimmer of hope here, and I think it's going to be fine. We'll be okay, but the quality of life is just going to reduce. It's just not going to be as robust as we're accustomed to. Therefore, as the expectations come down, Bobby, there will be some panic in people's lives, so they'll have to roll it back. Now, I fear the people who are going to panic most are going to be the people who have to drive a long distance in their automobiles to get to their jobs. And then not only that, they either leave the house to go fill up on odd, even days, because the fuel is coming.
That's coming late. There's going to be a big crunch.
Well, let me mention this real, just a little life, throwing it out there. Ladies and gentlemen, 1973, I was working for a couple years pumping gas when I was in high school. went through high school, graduated, did 4 years of varsity sports, volunteered on my my senior year of high school on my town's ambulance corps. Went to the EMT American Red Cross Advanced Course, not the EMT, but similar. Went through all that and very involved in my community and life. And then I had a full-time job after sports and on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday, 7 days a week, pumping gas, unless I was off doing a sports activity and then I wouldn't be there. And I lived, ladies and gentlemen, the 1973 gasoline crisis. And I'm gonna throw this out to you. This will be out there for everybody to forever listen to. I'll never forget the gentleman who came to the gas station, and I remember all the lines. And we had 20,000 gallon capacity tanks. Actually, we had two 20s and one 10, if I recall, because we had unleaded, leaded, and we had premium. And we had one of the largest capacity gas stations definitely in the town and one of the largest in the county. And we had the odd-even days. Tensions were running high. People would offer you all sorts of bribes. They'd offer you booze. Now, that didn't mean anything to me. They'd offer you money. They'd come with 55-gallon drums. This is going to happen, ladies and gentlemen, 55-gallon drums in the back of their pickup trucks. If you fill us up, I'll give you an extra this. I was offered once, I think it was 50-something bucks. Back in 1973 was a lot of money, and I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't take it. And people gotten very antsy, tried to shut the station down. They got very angry, and, I was able to take it. No big problem. I ran that during those hours by myself, and I grew up fast. This gentleman came in from New York City. He arrived in a nice big overcoat, nice fat cigar. We were sitting there just talking about the gasoline and whatever, and he kind of chuckled to this young high school kid, and he laughed and had his hands in his pocket, and it was a cool weather, and he laughed and he says, "There's no gasoline crisis there, bud." He said, "They're all sitting back up in New York, all backed up in the harbor, waiting to drop their load."
That's
right. He chuckled, and he said,
"They were.
This is all contrived." Now here's Tom Pastore.
It was contrived. I know. I lived in the city at that time.
So here's Tom Pastore, who knows, because he was even in some instances visually closer to it. So I lived this, ladies and gentlemen, and you know how do you know how popular it is to be working in high school in a gasoline station during the Arab-Israeli crisis and the gasoline? Ladies and gentlemen, I had so many fair weather friends that I didn't have much to drive home and go back and forth. But if I wanted to leverage, remember that early in the program? Now we're talking about bartering. Well, I didn't barter any of that. This is where your character is tested. And I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I left that job with my head held high and making sure that the people were taken care of and I did a good job because I was brought up that way.
Well,
now, I will admit to you, when I came to that gas station and I had my dad's car, because everything was legally paid for and did it, you can bet that the son made sure that his father, who went to work, had a completely full gas tank 7 days a week because I worked in that gas tank or gas station. So my father would come in, and everybody got a full tank, odd even. But I can guarantee you that if I'm going down and I'm opening up that station, I open it up, turn the pumps on, I made sure that my father was the first in line to get gasoline, only because, "Dad, okay, I'm going on down, I'm opening up the station, or you want to leave work and come on up?" You betcha. He was a paying customer. That was the advantage that I had to help my family. So you're getting my point? There's no, you don't do corruption. You just inform. But
I don't believe true bartering, exchanging of any goods and services amongst a couple people. I don't consider that to be illegal.
Right,
I don't know
if
the IRS wants to call it illegal. They can call it that, but I don't believe it is.
Well, you know, Sally, if memory serves, and I don't remember exactly how they went about it, but there was that in the late 60s, early 70s, there was the anti-capitalistic movement by the hippies and such, and that was an expanded practice of bartering. And the IRS went out of their way to shut that down in any way, shape, or form because they knew if it kept going expanding and people liked the concept, they would be out of business. And
they did
a large part. But what I'd like to say, and I don't want to use the word barter, but I will say if we do go into any fiscal crisis, which I think we're on the brink of right now, you can rest assured a large percentage of our economy is going to go underground. And I'd rather use the word underground than barter because that's what's going to happen. Our economy is going to go underground, and people will not be revealing how they're making incomes, regardless if it's bartering or whatever. And IRS is going to be in a major dilemma on how to collect because there won't be no way to establish what these people are doing. So I'd rather say that we'll go underground and we will increase the amount of our economy that will go underground as opposed to what's going to be revealed for people paying taxes. It will be an underground tea party, if you will, an underground tax revolution.
Yep.
They don't have the manpower to get them, Tom.
They won't be able to. But
they will eat them alive.
I'm telling you, it will go underground. Not only that, if we do have another backup of illusion or fabrication of a gas shortage, because it was a fabrication, I never had to wait in line. I just went to a friend's gas station at 3 o'clock in the morning. And many of them had signs up saying they had no gas, and yet they did because they didn't want to start. There was so much controversy. There was violence in the city. People got shot for jumping the line and killed. And it would get worse now because the economy, though bad that it was nothing compared to the way it is now. We did not have the housing crisis that we got now. Words like underwater were not words being used at that time.
But Tom, the other thing too, if you're not recalling my living history, because I recall those days so vividly, because they were, that's when I really grew up, and had to deal with adults who were angry and whatnot. And you know, this, thank God, I was brought up to be cool headed and started to be, you know, how to handle situations. But 1973, ladies and gentlemen, if you go back and check, absolutely, this is a great little footnote, you will find that the Japanese car companies actually were Japan benefited from the 1973 embargo. The 1973 embargo, by academic approach, was behavior modification. And what does that mean? Oh, it sounds like a lot. How can I prove that? What do you throw that out for? A lot of words. Behavior modification is when I take away your toys, now I'm going to see what you're going to do. How are you going to fill your time? If I take away your gasoline, I got your attention now, right? Well, you need a more fuel-efficient car. You need a smaller car. We need to downsize. We need to get you off that appetite of the 50-foot boat. It was behavior modification, and that's when Japanese cars, and then arguably after that Asian cars, picked up because they were told to us to be more fuel efficient and go longer on a gallon of gas. That's when people were selling. Ladies and gentlemen, this is 1973, and sorry for the storytelling, and I had a gentleman in the gas station, God's honest truth, 1982, black, with a black vinyl roof and a black interior with tons of chrome, and it was a Pontiac Grand Prix. If anybody knows what a 1972 Pontiac Grand Prix looked at back then, it was a gorgeous design. And when you offer that to an 18-year-old kid, you kind of like, that's hard to turn down. This gentleman came in the gas station, this is God's honest truth, and he said, $800. He wanted to sell that car for $800 to whoever, because he just wanted to dump it and go to something else. He was taking a tremendous loss. This is what we're going to see, and we saw this with people's trucks. Now gasoline's a little bit cheaper. When that comes again, these 40, 50-foot boats that people got now, they're going to go through the same mental procedure. So we're going to have stress in the streets. You're going to have anger that's going to go up more than it was back in 73 because we had God in schools, okay? You get my drift? People had a little bit more civility and understanding because families were closer. And when this hits, stress is going to go up. There's going to be more disorder. I'm just predicting this, or hoping it doesn't happen, but just logical deduction. You, the American statesman listener, are going to have to figure out ways ahead of time how to mitigate. You'll survive. You'll be fine. But how to mitigate, and I think that's what this program is going to help you to do, is just to prepare. And, you know, when you listen to Sally, listen to Tom, listen to Charlie, and listen to our call-ins, I think you'll see that there's hope out there for what's ahead. Now, in the Congress, as we talked about tonight, about the discussions on the Federal Reserve and the audit and so forth, we would not be allowed to be in this position, ladies and gentlemen, if it really was going to wind up having impact. So don't get upset with me for saying that. I'm just saying is things are meant by design or sometimes by happenstance. And I think that we're going to be so wrapped up in throwing a bone to the public. Okay, hear me. Because this is what the run-up is in 2012. Be careful of who your next Messiah is. You already got stuck with one. So you're going to have another 4 years and say, oh, my God, he's here. She's here. Okay? Don't let them sell you another plug nickel. Okay? It's coming. You're getting ready right now. And we told you, American statesmen, they just started doing it on the Republican side. And there's better Republican candidates out there, if that's your persuasion, than what they're showing us right now, who are getting television time. So put your hats on. Make your telephone calls. Write your letters to the editor. But understand that we're already on a glide path, and unless there's someone on this listening to us right now, unless you work for the Fed or you're on a committee in Congress or something else, there's only so much that we can do. And what you have to do now is mitigate.
Larry, on that note, I'm going to make a prediction, and I want the good people here who called in here to respond. I'm going to predict that Ron Paul will not be able to present his revelations of policy and procedure and what adverse consequences they have had and will have with the Federal Reserve. I predict he will not do that. He will do his investigation, but he will never reveal to the public because we are so fiscally shaky right now. We are so frail. And so much of our economy is based on speculation that anything he reveals would have such adverse effect that it would increase and speed up the collapse of this country's fiscal liability. So let me get some feedback on anybody. We got about 12 minutes left. What say you, good people? Sally?
Well, actually, I had a couple of things I was going to follow up on Larry's comments, but I know he wants to give an update on the food thing, too. Right now, I understand the comment to say that, but I don't know. I understand. I think Ron Paul has a bigger chance this time because of the financial crisis that we've already faced, and people are genuinely looking for a solution, and I believe he will be able to impact it. Is he going to be able to reform the whole thing? I don't know. I can't, not in all likelihood not, but I believe he's going to draw attention to some of the key issues that we are facing, and I believe he will make a difference. Not alone, but he's going to be the leader on this, and people are going to be informed. Those who don't understand, who have not been willing to speak up, will now have a chance to rally behind, learn, and then rally behind what he is trying to do. And I think for all of our sakes, we better hope somebody does something about this monetary policy, because Otherwise, we really are facing doomsday, if we're not facing it already. This is just as like a last-ditch attempt to try to save it.
Yeah, Bobby Bean, what say you?
No, I agree with Larry and Sally and even you, Tom, that first me and Tom are going to go in the bicycle business, everybody. So in the future, you at least have some wheels. Right, Tom?
We're going to build bicycles built for many. We'll get the whole family on one bicycle.
It could happen, but we are going to face a big crunch, and we're all going to get tight. We will get through it, but I hate to seem negative because I do believe in this great country, but I do look forward to Ron Paul to be one of the great leaders in this movement. But there's also that part, Larry, that I'm a little unsure how we're going to come through this, because we're really behind the eight ball here. We've been lied to so many times and deceived. If they keep it up, Larry and Sally, we could be flushing the toilet bowl here shortly on everything.
Scary thoughts. Nathan, what say you?
Yeah, I was just calling in because I was hearing you reminisce about the 70s, and I just wanted to remind you that even though Nixon wasn't in, he was the one that laid all that stuff with the Japanese in place. We're going to do trade with them, and then Carter comes in, and that's when the people started trading in their GTOs and Monte Carlos and pickups and station wagons for these little converted beer cans. So that wasn't just something that just happened. It was something else that was being followed up on. I remember the ethanol. They put ethanol in, and the stations, they were really, it was hot for a lot of people. But whenever the government said, okay, we're cutting out the subsidies, the service stations that had ethanol said, well, get it out of here, And this ethanol right now we got going on where they went ethanol across the board, this kind of messes us up because you can't get a 55-gallon drum and store gasoline because within a month it's going to be like paint thinner. Because once that ethanol goes into it, you got to just get on the road and drive and use it then.
That's right.
Something I want to point out to you that if they cut the ethanol out now, and we've gone to the ethanol across the board, that could really hurt. That could really hurt some prices. These corn farmers are going to say we got to raise the price of corn. Government ain't giving us welfare anymore. Now I'm gonna close on one thing that an observation I've noticed that nobody's caught. If you remember back when oil on the stock market was $150 a barrel, it averaged $3 a gallon across the country. Okay, and when it hit $88 recently, that's whenever it averaged $3 a gallon across the country. It's like $3.15 or $14 now at $91 a barrel. So that means that whenever it started going down, the gas started going down faster than the oil did, and the oil started going down. They didn't come down together. The oil started dropping, and there was a gap in between them. So I don't know if it was the county, cities, and local states that put their taxes on it to fill up that little gap. But right now at $91 a barrel, and it's $314 or $304, but it's averaging. Here it's like $304, $303, but across
Nathan,
the country,
$343
on average.
For diesel.
Okay. Oh, and I'm talking about for gas. Okay, I'm talking about regular. Regular gas is averaging like $314 nationwide at $91 a barrel. When it gets back up to $150 a barrel, whatever's took up that gap between the barrel and the gas at the pump, whatever filled that gap up and made it wider, when it hits $150 a barrel, we're looking between $5.50 to $6 a gallon. And, I noticed this when it was dropping. I seen the gap. I got a hold of several people here in the local media, and nobody responded, but Bud Hettinger did tell me there's always a little bit of a gap between the price of the barrel and the pump, And I sent back an email. I said, yeah, but not this big of a gap, and he never responded to me again. But he also promoted ethanol. Bud Hettinger promoted ethanol as a way to make gas cheaper, and he was for that. And then as soon as it got in, gas went up. The price of gas went up, and your mileage went down because ethanol burns up quick when it hits that cylinder.
Yeah, well, Nathan, I know we're running down here in the show.
Yeah.
I want to make a comment real quick on that. When unleaded gasoline came in 1973, 1973 again, unleaded gasoline hit the road. They said it's going to be cheaper because the lead's taken out of it. And then unleaded gasoline, look at your history, went higher than the leaded gasoline. Anytime someone tells you something's going to be cheaper, then that's when it's going to be. The Corn Belt in the mid-United States. Right now, 46% of the corn that is produced goes into ethanol. Now, I'd rather have genetically modified corn going into ethanol than going into the human body. But the fact is that it's competing against food. Then food is going to rise because they're going to have less corn. I wouldn't eat the genetically modified corn anyway, but you're going to have less corn to make products, so the food is going to go up exponentially. So that I don't disagree with your logic. In fact, I would endorse it because it's rational. These costs are going to go up. And for folks out there, we've said it already here in American Statesman, when gasoline or fuel goes up, whether it's diesel or whatever, it is a indirect way of preventing travel. It's an indirect way of preventing it because you're going to put your own brakes on it because of money. It's a way of limiting people's travel in the United States. So you're going to have unemployment that's going to go up because hotels and motels aren't going to have the traffic. Orlando's going to feel it because people aren't going to be able to afford to travel down there. And I believe planes are going to drop off in use because people aren't going to be able to spend the hard cash or want to go into debt to take that plane usage. So people are going to stay local. When people stay local, the good news is cooperation is going to go up. So the good news of anything in the future, ladies and gentlemen, the good and the bad, community cooperation over a period of time is going to increase because you're going to be staying more local. That's the good news, in with your churches, in with your community centers. And I'll say it right here. We're making predictions tonight. When the bad time hits and people get a little bit more mobile, more healthful, and some place it's more difficult to get on a bike. You know, it's nice to say those things, and I think a lot of it will increase. It'll become more fashionable. Community is going to hopefully come back again. We'll have a spike temporarily in crime, hopefully. People won't overreact, but stay safe. But community is going to come back. And then what are they going to do when the community strength at the local level, all politics are local, starts to come back again? Okay, if I can segue, because I know we're getting down, and I
want to turn 2 minutes,
right
back over. Larry. 2 minutes,
yeah,
Larry.
I just want to turn
it back over. Seconds.
I won't be
seconds.
Able to talk about the food, but I just want to throw it out real quick. End of life, in the Obamacare, the end of life is this. We mentioned here earlier, that's not what's in the bill, ladies and gentlemen. What the danger is, what's codified from the bill. And now they're going to be paying doctors. This came out on the 25th, on Christmas Day. Regulation that the government will pay. So the incentive is if a doctor advises patients for an option for end-of-life care, which will include advanced life directives and whatever, you can expect all elderly patients who are ill, over 65, now I don't mean to say you're elderly at 65 but because of Medicare, you can expect that if you have some kind of illness, which is correctable, that's for another program,
got 60 seconds.
You can expect to be counseled because that doctor is getting paid to talk to you. So you're gonna be hearing it more. I'll turn it back over to you, Tom.
Sally, you have any closing comments?
Well, we're about running out of time here, but it looks like we need to definitely continue this discussion a little bit more on the Federal Reserve stuff and carry that on, but definitely do an update on what's going on with health care and the food safety bill and all that stuff too. So, but sounds like we had a very good discussion tonight. Lots more to talk about.
Sure did.
Most definitely. I want everyone, let's all keep an eye on Rahm Emanuel and his little Chicago politics that's going on over there. Is he a resident or is he not a resident? This is going to be one of the ongoing battles here for his sued for mayor. So let's keep an eye on that story. It'd be an interesting concept. We couldn't discuss that tonight.
Right.
Okay, I got this English-speaking lady telling me I got 60 seconds left over here. Any
Tom,
closing arguments?
God bless this good country.
Okay, everybody, let's keep an eye on Ron Paul. Like I said, I got a fear inside me that our economy being so frail as it is, that they will not allow Ron Paul to reveal what he finds out from the Federal Reserve, because we could be on the brink of total collapse, just like, and I hate to disagree, Larry, just like I don't think they're going to let another manipulated oil shortage occur, because we're much too frail now as opposed to how we were in the 70s. But that's my opinion. You know, it's all manipulation. It's a chess game that we're not allowed to play, just observe. And we got to jump in there one of these days. Everybody,
we're gonna play, Tom.
I thank you all for participating. We got about 10 seconds. Once again, this is the American Statesman Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Everybody have a good night.
See you Thursday.
God bless.
Godspeed, everybody.
God bless
okay.
you all.
Night.
We're now off the air.
We're off the air now, huh?
Yep.
Yep.
I'll
okay.
talk to you guys
thank you
later.
Again, Tom.
Okay,
no,
we'll
no.
talk soon. Everybody
no
have a good night.
Good night.
Good night, Jim Bob.
Ha, ha, ha.